Welcome back to State Affairs. This is Friday, but we're continuing the meeting from Thursday, April 11th. Madam Secretary, do we need to call the roll again or not, since we were just coming back from recess? Okay. Do you mind calling the roll?
Representative Ledoux?
Here.
Representative Stern?
Here.
Representative Wolf? Representative Vance?
Here.
Representative Shaw?
Here.
Co-Chair Fields?
Here.
Co-Chair Hesponkin.
Okay, we have a quorum. We have Representative Klim in the room. Please silence your cell phones. Thank you to our moderator, Martha Moore. On the agenda today, we just have House Bill 33, Sexual Assault, Sex Offender Registration, with Representative Klim and his staff, Lizzie Kubitz, if y'all want to come to the table. And my goal is to be, well, ideally we can get through as much as possible by 10 when Representative Ledoux needs to leave, but even after that, we would have a quorum. So, this is the first hearing in House State Affairs, and do we have a motion, Representative Shaw, to adopt the committee substitute?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is the second hearing on the bill. There is a proposed committee substitute to House Bill 33. Could I have a motion to adopt the committee substitute as a working document? No, that was yours. I rescind everything I just said. A follow-up?
Follow up.
It's her time.
And it's Friday.
Friday.
I'm sorry. Wow. I move that the House State Affairs Committee adopt the committee substitute to House Bill 33 as our working document.
Seeing no objection, the substitute is adopted. Representative Klim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Matt Klayman, and I'm the state representative for House District 21 in West Anchorage. First off, I want to thank all of you for being here this morning at a super, super early hour for a Friday. Over the last few months, Alaskans have read reports of sexual assault and violence at the local, state, and national level. By proposing amendments to improve Alaska's sexual assault and sex offender registration statutes, concerned community members can trust that the legislature is listening and taking important steps to update our laws to improve public safety. House Bill 33 removes a legal defense to sexual assault that currently exists in state law. In certain limited circumstances, current law allows a perpetrator of sexual assault to use marriage as a defense if the person engages in sexual activity with their spouse when they know their spouse is mentally incapable, incapacitated, or unaware that the sexual act is being committed. House Bill 33 removes this defense. House Bill 33 also clarifies that a person who is convicted of a sex crime and required to register as a sex offender in another state is also required to register as a sex offender in Alaska. Under House Bill 33, sex offenders and child kidnappers who have been criminally convicted in other states outside Alaska would have to register with Alaska databases if they are residing in our state. This clarification will bring more accountability for people who otherwise might not have a state record. Before I pass it over to my staff, I'd like to note for the committee that the S version that you have adopted in place of the version M of the bill is because we learned as we looked at the bill that if an out-of-state juvenile offender was charged as a minor in that other state and not as an adult, but required to register as a minor under that state's laws, which would not be the case in Alaska, a court may find that the Alaska Privacy Clause protects that information. Accordingly, the bill was amended to clarify that out-of-state juvenile offenders who were charged as a minor are not required to register as a sex offender. And with that, I will turn it over to my staff, Lizzie Kubitz, to explain the details of the bill.
Thank you, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lizzie Kubitz, and I'm staff to Representative Klayman. Thank you for hearing House Bill 33 today. So looking at the committee substitute version S that was adopted, Section 1 amends AS 1141432, subsection A, to remove marriage as a defense if the person engages in sexual activity with their spouse when they know their spouse is mentally incapable, incapacitated, or unaware that the sexual act is being committed. Section 2 is a conforming amendment amending AS 1263010, subsection D, to reflect a change made in Section 3 of this bill. Moving on to Section 3, Section 3 amends AS 1263020 to clarify that a person who is convicted of an offense as an adult including a juvenile who has been waived into adult court and treated as an adult, is required to register as a sex offender or child kidnapper in another jurisdiction, is also required to register as a sex offender in Alaska. Section 4 amends AS 1263-100 subsection 6 to add a person who is convicted of an offense as an adult and required to register as a sex offender or a child kidnapper in another jurisdiction to the definition of sex offender or child kidnapper. Here you can see where the language makes the distinction that only out-of-state offenders who were charged and convicted as an adult are required to register as a sex offender. This is a result of the change that Representative Klayman remarked on just earlier. This change is also described in the explanation of changes provided in your bill packets. And finally, Section 5 contains applicability provisions. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have quite a few questions. Trying to decide where to begin. Thank you, Representative Klayman, for bringing forth this bill. It's definitely one that is very necessary, but it's also pushing the social norms. And I guess my first question is more of some technical things of how is the sex registration enforced when an offender, either comes into the state, or changes their address or whatever? How do we know that offenders are being compliant?
I guess there's two parts to the answer that we can tell you. The first is that all states have sex offender registration requirements, and so typically those that are required to register in other states come to a new state and they immediately want to know, do they have to register? So there's apparently a frequent number of questions that are asked of Department of Public Safety, do I have to register? But in terms of how much investigation resources, that's more a question for Department of Public Safety. I couldn't answer that, but there are laws about failure to register as a sex offender in Alaska that would make it a felony for non-registration, and I know that is prosecuted from time to time, but I actually don't know the answer to what resources public safety has to enforce these laws.
Follow up?
That is a question we can find out from public safety.
The reason is, it's a matter of the public trust and feeling secure that these people are going to be accountable and that more people will be aware of the sex offenders out there and just know who they're hiring, who's in their neighborhood, and that type of thing. And if we have it on the books and it's not being utilized, then people feel like we're failing them. And so I just wanted to have it on the record of how that works so that people can understand that a little bit more. Another technical question is on page 4, it said provide for tolling of the registration period. Can you describe what the word tolling of the means? It's the second paragraph. It's the two, provide for tolling of the registration period of the sex offender, line 3, excuse me. Page 4, line 3.
Through the chair, Representative Vance, what that simply means is if a person came into Alaska on January 1st and they were required to register under our law and they were registered in the other state from which they came and they failed to register when they arrived in Alaska, the duty to register would continue, but the statute of limitations issue that might say, oh, they no longer needed to register, essentially it prevents them waiting us out. So if they realize, let me try to see if I can walk you through this carefully enough. If on January 1st they arrive and they would have a duty to register for the next year, and that time they do not register, and then after the year they say, well, I don't have to register anymore because my obligation to register based on out-of-state convictions ended January 1st of the following year, the tolling provision would say that they don't get to claim that year because they needed to register for the year they were here, and since they didn't, they would need to register even though they may not have to register if they were just arriving at the end of the second year.
Follow-up, I would I would relinquish to someone else at this point, but I do have more questions.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Would you speak to I just want to talk about the marriage aspect, because that is something that has been traditionally very untouchable and sacred when it comes to the sexual relations in a marriage relationship. And this seeks to change that. And I'd just like you to speak to the need for that on record, so that, because this is changing previous expectations culturally of what was acceptable and not acceptable in the marriage relationship. And I think that we do need to discuss the merits of this.
Through the chair, Representative Vance, first is that today, for consenting, functioning adults, marriage is not a defense to sexual assault. Mm-hmm. That defense was taken away, I believe, decades ago. I can't tell you exactly when, but as much as anyone might say, oh, members of the legislature, something's wrong with all of us because we're here, we actually are, by every sense, totally capable, functioning, well-operating adults. And whether we're married or not married, if we say to a person, no, I don't want to engage in sexual relations tonight, that the fact that one is married does not create a defense to that charge. This removal of the marriage defense strictly relates to situations in which the spouse is incompetent. It comes up sometimes with people, the elderly with significant mental disease and disorders. Dementia is one of the areas that becomes a concern about, can somebody in these mental states actually consent. It also goes into people who may be highly intoxicated and passed out. It goes to people who may have taken drug overdoses and otherwise not functioning. And the defense would basically say that the fact that your spouse is lying on the ground passed out, you can't say, well, they consented and they have to consent because I'm married to them and they do whatever I want them to do. The marriage, this is taking that marriage defense away in the context of incompetent and incapacitated individuals, but it doesn't change the existing law where marriage is not a defense to sexual assault already.
Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
So when we talk about dementia or Alzheimer's, for example, then I guess what you're saying is that once one of those conditions afflicts one of the spouses, that there can no longer be sexual relationships between the spouses?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, we've actually been having a number of conversations with Quinlan Steiner, the public defender, and one of the issues that Mr. Steiner has identified is that, in fact, one, the question of consent is still a live topic, because a person that suffers from dementia can agree to all kinds of things, not just sexual relationships, but the people with dementia all the time, I think, sign documents regarding their financial affairs, and it depends on the degree of the dementia. So all these things are very fact-driven, and none of them are simple answers.
Just so a follow-up here. So I guess I'm thinking, so husband and wife go to a party together. They both get really intoxicated. they're both entitled to be there in bed together because it's their bed. Where will this, I mean, what I'm afraid of is that this might come up as a bludgeon in divorce court more than anything else.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I can't necessarily speak to the bludgeon in divorce court, but I have heard stories of two people that were married and exactly the parties you're describing, and they're both falling down, barely functioning drunk, and they go home and despite the level of intoxication, there's apparently some sexual activity, and one of them gets up in the morning and is unhappy that that happened, and the other one doesn't remember anything. And I think typically those don't lead to criminal charges. They hopefully lead to counseling sessions, because it gets what constitutes consent and what doesn't constitute consent is, in those circumstances, is not easy.
But
and I don't claim to have an answer to that, but the notion of you get into questions about incapacity or not whether there's capacity, the incapacity goes to the question of the ability to consent.
But you say hopefully it doesn't lead to criminal charges, and I guess I'm seeing that that's exactly what this bill is designed to do, to lead to criminal charges. Who, I guess I'm somewhat curious, how did this bill occur to you? Did anybody particularly bring it forth as a problem?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, this is part of some of the issues that have arisen in questions responding to the Schneider case. And then when we were looking at the issues specific to the Schneider case, the Department of Law and others identified the current status of the marriage defense with incapacitated persons as an issue that needs to be looked at carefully.
Thank you.
Representative Story.
Thank you. And thank you for your work on this. I really feel strongly that it's important that we follow through on registering sex offenders, and I appreciate Representative Vance's concerns about how can we enforce this and make sure people know that this is happening. And so that is something we need to be vigilant about, and the department needs to be vigilant about. But I feel it needs to be on the books, that it is required, it is a statute, and we expect that as legislators that will happen. So I'm pleased to see this coming before. And I guess I would have to say with the prior discussion about in Section 1 about removing marriage as a defense, I see why this needs to be in law. I know there's complicated issues that can arise from it, but I believe that's why we have counsel to get when situations like that happen, because I don't believe, because unfortunately there is a need for this law.
Representative Vance.
Thank you. I think I'd like to go back to the issue of, the topic of consent in marriage, and obviously that's a very big one. And you had mentioned that the Schneider case was kind of the impetus of this, but as I recall, the two were not married, and so I was wondering how this came about from the thought on that when this the reason that I'm asking for more conversation in this is because we want to make our legislative intent clear and have everything on the record and walk through the thought process and conversation. Could you speak to that, Representative?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, you are correct that Schneider was not married to the woman that that he assaulted. And what commonly happens when a particular public, an event in the public raises questions about the status of our criminal law, it's not uncommon to go back and take a look at other laws to see if there's areas of law, even though the facts of that particular case have no relationship to this particular change. It's common to go back and look to see if there are some gaps or areas of the law that should get re-examined in light of that. And really what the Schneider case did in large measure was cause, I think, at many levels, listening to the public. They said, go back and look and see if there are other issues and loopholes in our sexual assault statutes that need to be looked at more carefully and possibly revised, because what was a surprise in the Schneider case was that there was a loophole that made it so that he couldn't be charged with sexual assault. But what was particularly interesting was we researched it and discovered that of the 50 states, that loophole existed in 49 of them. The only state that didn't have that loophole was Connecticut. And that doesn't say that 49 states got it wrong. It says that sometimes you need to go back and look to see if there's gaps or loopholes that need to be explored. And the topic of the marriage defense was one that has been looked at in ways. I mean, the marriage defense with fully competent adults was done away with years ago. But there's other areas in which it was thought that it should still continue to exist. And so this is an exploration of that very question.
Follow up. So this begs the larger question of, you know, we have, it would seem that in marriage that there's an assumed consent to the agreement of marriage. But when the subject of being mentally incapable, incapacitated of some sort, that infringes upon that individual's right to their security. Is my thinking correctly in this train of thought of that's why this provision would be needed, is though even though there was an assumed consent in the marriage, if one individual is not mentally capable or incapacitated, that original contract, if you will, could not breach the individual's right to give consent.
Through the chair, Representative Vance, you pose an interesting question. As a legal matter, I think Alaska and all 50 states have done away with the notion that because we got married 3 years ago that our spouses are consenting to have sexual relationships with us every night and every morning or whenever the other partner's interested. That's certainly not the reality that's not consistent with the reality that I live with, and I think I view that it's a daily, you know, what you do with your spouse is something that consent is always needs to be present, and the fact that we got married a year ago or 29 years ago doesn't change that reality. And I think that's what the law reflects, the value, the attitude that consent, that people have to consent every day.
Follow up? Or?
Yes, I thank you for the leniency here.
Actually, if you don't mind, can we go to Representative Ledoux first, because I know she has to
Yes.
speak. Sorry.
Just thank you for the leniency in answering my questions.
You know, I understand that simply by marriage, there's no consent to rape. But somehow or other, in this proposed bill, it seems to be regulating those situations where both people go to the party and both of them are drunk and they end up in bed and one person may not remember it in the morning and gets mad about something else. And quite frankly, I'm not sure I want to go there.
Just through the chair, just to respond to that briefly, I think we're focused on marriage. However, these scenarios happen in all sorts of relationships and don't have statutes dedicated to them in this sense. So I think obviously what we're trying to do with this bill is deal with the issue of spousal rape. However, I understand we're having to juggle other scenarios also.
Follow up. So, yes, I do understand that they come up in other cases and it becomes a he said, she said sort of thing, which is very, very difficult. And there have been Title IX cases at the universities which have then been, they've gone through the Title IX procedure, but even though the DAs have not wanted to prosecute, and then there's been lawsuits and so forth. In those cases, at least, you know, you could argue, well, where did the consent, I mean, both drunk, did she or he, for that matter, consent to go into the bedroom together, go into the bed together? I mean, so it starts before. Here you have two people, and they share one bed, and they're drunk. So, anyway, I've got to go.
Representative Ledoux, and sorry for the difficult schedule. Representative Vance, you had some follow-ups, I think.
No, I think I'm not going to continue to go down this road, but my concern is just people's individual rights, you know, when it comes to protecting your freedoms. And so I would like to look at this a little bit thoroughly so that I am settled with the picture clearly. I think this is definitely a great conversation for us to have, and the topic of consent we've heard in other bills, and that we need to allow the public to get an understanding of this as we walk through the legal and the social assumptions. So thank you again, Representative Clayman, for allowing me the questions and walking through some of this, and also to you, Representative, for taking the time. But I would like a little bit more time to review this bill.
Okay. Representative, sorry.
To me, I see this just looking at what it says is it removes marriage as a defense if the person is engaged in sexual activity with their spouse when their spouse is incapable, mentally incapacitated, or unaware. And I think that is good. I think that is right. And I think people would agree on that. I know that there's all different sorts of situations that can happen, and but I just think as a bottom line, people agree that there should be consent. And so I don't, what I guess I'm saying is I'm not concerned about various issues and things like that. I just think this is a bottom line. I think that I'm comfortable. The will of the committee, I'm fine with whatever the will of the committee is. I just know that this is going to be going to another committee that they will be looking at it and asking these questions to, and so I'm fine to remove it for committee.
Representative Shaw.
Yes, through the chair, I also agree with my colleague next to me in that the bottom line here, we can throw out 100 versions of some reason one way or the other, but as my colleague next to me has said, the bottom line is self-explanatory. And I think the fact that it has been noted in very formidable terms, we could debate it to the end, and as Representative Ledoux had come up, there's 100 scenarios out there. But the wording in a very few lines condenses all of that. And for the benefit of the bottom line, I'm very happy with the legislation as it sits.
Okay.
Through the chair, of kind of responding to Representative Vance's questions about it, as you know, I make myself very available to the extent this bill moves from this committee. I'm certainly available and able, and it doesn't take a lot of schedule to find a window, and we can sit down and talk about it in more detail. It doesn't necessarily have to be in committee, but I'm more than happy to discuss the bills as we have on other bills.
Thank you.
Normally, Representative Vance, I would just want to have another hearing on it and talk through it in more detail. But in this case, since the Judiciary Committee is going to take up a comprehensive criminal justice bill next week, I would suggest that we move the bill from committee at this time. And if you think it might need significant changes, you could mark the amend section on the report to kind of indicate that interest in further changes. Is that acceptable to you as a path forward? And I'm sorry that we're in a compressed time frame.
Thank you for that. I don't know about any making any amendments, but just want to make sure that I have an understanding of this and not putting my responsibility off on anyone else. But I'm not going to hold it up in committee since several of our members have expressed the. At this point, it seems to be. We should switch seats and then.
Okay. Well, in that case, sorry again for the compressed time frame. That's probably our fault as co-chairman of the committee. So I apologize for that, Representative Shaw.
Yes, I move version 31-LS0292/S of House Bill 33 with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Thank you, Representative Shaw. Seeing no objection, the bill passes from committee. And that completes our agenda for today, so please remember to sign the report. And at 10:05, we're adjourned.